and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. The Trump administration is trying to strip temporary protected status for Venezuelans and others. We hear from advocates about the growing legal uncertainty.
Because I can't help myself.
Our intrepid reporter, Patty Wetley, on a new way to get your urban nature fix. And for the first time in nearly 100 years, there is an open swimming event happening in the Chicago River. What to know about that swim? First off tonight, as the Department of Homeland Security's Operation Midway Blitz continues, immigration activists across Chicago are escalating their own responses.
It has been a heartbreaking week in the Northwest Side. On Tuesday, September 16th, five members of our community were detained as they traveled to work. And yesterday morning, Wednesday, September 17th, we experienced widespread ICE presence occupying our neighborhoods. But as ICE continues to patrol our streets, rapid response teams here vow to do the same.
The Northwest Side Rapid Response Team canvassed neighborhoods this morning, sharing Know Your Rights information. Other activists say federal agents have been spotted outside Home Depot and Menards stores in the city and suburbs, resulting in individual arrests, or folks have been pulled over in traffic stops. In response, organizers are passing out orange whistles to alert neighbors when ICE is spotted in some Southwest Side communities. Other communities are dispatching volunteers to record video and gather information when arrests are happening to notify families. Some Chicago Board of Education members say the district is failing some of its students in special education, and they're looking for answers.
One especially troubling issue is that a number of families have been told there is a seat availability challenge, which has resulted in children whose IEPs have a cluster designation not being assigned a school at all, and their families being told to send them to their neighborhood school, regardless of whether that school has the staff and resources needed to provide services.
The board members say they've heard repeatedly from parents at board meetings that their child hasn't been receiving all of their legally required individualized education plan minutes, and that there are major gaps in staffing, as well as a lack of availability at schools with cluster programming. They're asking Chicago Public Schools CEO Macquelin King to provide answers at next week's board meeting on how many special education teacher and assistant positions remain unfilled and where they are, as well as how many students are still in need of proper placement and how those IEP minutes are being made up. In a statement late this afternoon, a CPS spokesperson says the district has made improvements this year with fewer gaps in services and fewer staff vacancies. The state's 11th case of measles has been diagnosed in an unvaccinated suburban child. The Cook County Health Department confirmed the case as measles continues to increase across the country to the highest level in over 30 years. Officials say measles is highly contagious and deadly, especially for young children, but reminds residents that two doses of the measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine is proven to be 97% effective in preventing those diseases. At the same time, a summer uptick in mpox remains steady, though small, with 14 new cases since early September alone. While anyone can get mpox, public health officials say this recent increase has primarily affected sexually active gay and bisexual men. Up next, how temporary immigration protections for Venezuelans are under threat from the Trump administration.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Tens of thousands of local Venezuelans are in legal limbo as the Trump administration attempts to end temporary protected status. These deportation protections were granted to Venezuelan immigrants in 2021 and 2023 and were extended through October 2026. The Trump administration tried to cut them short earlier this month, but a federal judge blocked that effort, allowing the protections to remain. The Department of Homeland Security, though, says it is challenging that ruling. Joining us now are Jeanette Camillo, Development Assistant at Social Services Agency Centro Romero, and Claire Dutre, an immigration attorney at McEntee Law Group. Thanks to you both for joining us. Claire, let's start with you, please. Temporary protected status, we know it's been through some tumultuous changes this year with these efforts to end it. Why is this litigation ongoing, especially if, you know, temporary protected status is intended to be a short-term designation?
Right. It is intended to be short-term, but it's supposed to remain while these designated countries are unsafe. These countries have been designated because it's not safe for people to return there because there's been maybe a natural disaster, maybe there's political issues where people's lives would be at risk if they returned. So some of these countries have been designated for many, many years, decades sometimes. I mean, Venezuela is more recent, but it's, you know, the issue there is more people, even though it's temporary, people still build their lives here based on that protection from being removed from here.
Jeanette, for many, work permits, other benefits are tied to their temporary protected status. Tell us more about what some of those protections mean for someone who's seeking asylum here.
Yeah, so I think it's important to remember that with TPS, you are granted a work authorization, right? So by getting rid of these TPS for the Venezuelans, then you are putting them at risk of, you know, what comes next. There's a lack of financial stability, which means it could lead to homelessness. How do they support their families? They will try to seek other services like seeking shelter, or other things to consider is like trying to access public benefit, but, you know, what options are there for them are quite limited in general.
What are some of the other, I guess, sort of benefits that are tied to that status?
The other benefits include, I think, just like having sort of stability here in the United States. Something to consider is that, you know, these are mixed status families, right? You have families where maybe their child is born here, and then you have parents who don't have immigration status, right? If that's taken away through TPS. And we have to think about what's going to happen to those children. So there's a lot of fear going on within individuals and their families and the community. So it's thinking about the benefits that are out there. It's just, you know, what is at stake, really?
Some in the Trump administration might say immigrants are using this temporary protected status to stay, basically, as a path to citizenship or just to stay in the country when they really could go home. What do you say to that?
It's important to remember that these families are leaving because it is not safe for them. There are root causes to immigration. It can be economic, it can be political, it can be, you know, societal factors. And so by saying, oh, you can go back, doesn't necessarily guarantee that if they go back, it's going to be okay for them. If anything, they're most likely could come back.
Claire, if these protections are taken away, what legal recourse do the beneficiaries of TPS have?
It really depends on every person, and that's why I really advise everybody who is on TPS to seek advice with, you know, a trusted immigration attorney, legal service providers in the city, because some people may qualify for asylum. In fact, many people who have TPS probably qualify for asylum and need to be aware that there's a one-year deadline, so they need to make sure they file in time. And others might not have qualified for something maybe 2 months ago or last year, but now they do because maybe they're married to a U.S. citizen. So making sure that we reassess the case, you know, is very, very important right now, despite what, you know, there's litigation happening, and so everything is in limbo. And in order to protect yourself, I really advise people to actually seek advice and not hide from it.
We do have a statement from the Department of Homeland Security, and they say, quote, while these injunctions delay justice and undermine the integrity of our immigration system, Secretary Noem will use every legal option at the department's disposal to end this chaos and prioritize the safety of Americans. Under God, the people rule. Unelected activist judges cannot stop the will of the American people for a safe and secure homeland. In the meantime, Jeanette, folks are living in sort of like this legal limbo. What does that mean for them?
Well, as I kind of mentioned, there's this ongoing fear of what's going to happen to them. What the next steps are they going to take? As kind of mentioned, making sure you seek legal consultation from an immigration attorney or legal services that have DOJ accredited representatives. But yes, there's an ongoing fear. People don't know what's going to happen, especially with social media spreading misinformation. We want to be really careful about that sort of misinformation that is being spread. So that causes a lot of anxiety, and people are scared to even go out of their homes, go, you know, take their children to school, you know, go get groceries, simple things like that. They're living in this fear, and we want to make sure that they know that, you know, they still have rights despite being undocumented.
Department of Homeland Security has said that the conditions in countries like Haiti and Venezuela have improved so that these protections aren't needed. Claire, do you think that is the case?
Well, if you go on the Department of State website and you see if it's advised for at least American citizens to travel there, it says it is not. It says do not travel to Venezuela. It says, I believe, reconsider travel to Haiti. There's security threats there. So we're saying that it's not safe for U.S. citizens to travel to these countries. But also we're saying that people from these countries should be safe going back there, that they should be stripped of protections here so that they are removed, you know, like, I mean, they've done nothing wrong. This is not about being a criminal. This is about immigration, so that they are removed and go back to danger in places where we don't even let our citizens go.
There's also been a lot of action this week with ICE operations, of course, as we were just discussing earlier in the program, ramping up in the city. Jeanette, what concerns are you hearing from community members about that being sort of an added layer of concern for them?
Yeah, with the community, I mean, kind of was mentioned, a lot of people are scared, especially children. We're even talking about children being scared of what happens if I go to school and my mom or dad is deported. You know, there's this a fear of, like, what should we do as a community to make sure we are informed? There are Know Your Rights presentations, right? These are very important because not only do we tell individuals about their rights, you know, at schools and local neighborhoods or at our, you know, local organizations, but it also helps them understand what to do if you're confronted with ICE. If ICE comes to your house, right, what do you do? We always tell them to remain calm, but it's an ongoing conversation of staying calm and collective, understanding what your rights are. You know, people are scared, but we want to reiterate again that we are there for them.
Okay, that's where we'll have to leave it. Jeanette Camilo and Claire Dutre, thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're back with more right after this. There's a reason the city's motto is Urbs in Horto, or City in a Garden. Because for a city, urban nature here is bountiful. So for all of you nature lovers out there, our intrepid reporter Patty Whatley is bringing you a new way to get your nature fix. Patty joins us now to tell us all about this exciting adventure.
Gotta be intrepid.
Yes, because you are. And so you've been covering everything from obviously the piping plovers to Park District politics for quite some time.
Yes.
What is changing?
So we're giving you yet another way to get your nature coverage. You know, people, they see me here on Chicago Tonight. They come to our website. We do a lot on Instagram. Here, we're coming straight to your inbox with nature coverage. Nothing but nature. Every Friday afternoon newsletter. Lots of extra great content that kind of doesn't fit in any of those buckets that I just mentioned.
Right, because you previously had the column, of course, that was in our daily Chicagoan newsletter.
Yes, that's moving, and events are moving, all of this on Friday. Really, we've created a hub. I want it to be like a hub, a community for all my fellow folks who find nature so fascinating and just weird and interesting and just want more of that, more than I can maybe produce a digital article on, you know. Short news tidbits, just some plain fun stuff like Creature Feature, where, like, here's this weird plant or animal or weird thing about a plant or animal or, you know, just strange things that we come across.
And more opportunity to get some of Patty's amazing writing.
And more of the photos that I obsessively take everywhere I go.
That we can get on social media if we follow you there.
Exactly.
Is there anything that you want viewers and readers to get from this that they maybe weren't getting before?
I mean, I think I want this to be a place that it feels like this is their tribe. You know, we found our tribe. Sometimes some of this content, too, there's so much out there. Not just nature content, content in general. And things can get lost. And here's kind of a place where we pull it all together for you. It comes straight to your inbox. You don't have to seek it out. It comes to you. But I want it to feel like, you know, this comfortable home where we can all like geek out over mushrooms together or feel sad about a dead plover chick together and know that you're like with people who feel the same way about something that you love.
A safe space for you and your fellow urban nature nerds.
Yes, exactly.
So what do people have to do to sign up to receive this in their inbox?
Well, some lucky folks got the first issue last week. If you got that, you're good to go. Otherwise, if you want to sign up for it, you go to wttw.com/newsletter. You look for Urban Nature. You click add it. And you're on the list. You'll be on it. If you click on there today, you will get this Friday's.
All right. Good job, Patty. Congrats on the new newsletter. Thank you for telling us all about it.
Thanks, Brandis.
And again, you can sign up for Patty's Urban Nature Weekly newsletter at wttw.com/newsletter. Jump in, the water is fine. Organizers say hundreds of swimmers will finally dive in for the Chicago River Swim this Sunday. It'll be the first open water swimming event in the river in nearly 100 years, the last one in 1927. Event organizers say they hope the race will wash away public perceptions of the river as being polluted while raising money for ALS research and youth swimming lessons. Joining us now are Douglas McConnell, co-founder of A Long Swim, a local charity that hosts open water swimming events to bring awareness and funding to ALS research, Margaret Frisbee, executive director of Friends of the Chicago River, and Becca Mann, a professional swimmer who represented Team USA on the world stage four times, I should say the world pool, and will be a participant in this weekend's race. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Let's dive in. Doug, see what I did there? You're the main organizer of this event. Why a river swim?
Well, we were introduced to the idea several years ago when we were notified of a group that does a swim in the canals of Amsterdam. And we got in touch with the race organizers, wonderful guys that have been so helpful in as we've been planning the river swim. And boy, the more videos they sent us, the more it looked like the Chicago River. And so we started, that was where the idea kind of came from. And now 13 years later, we're going to be in the river.
It only took 13 years.
That's it.
Margaret, last year's event raised $200,000, but had to move from the river to Lake Michigan because of water safety concerns. What steps has your organization taken to ensure that the river is safe for swimming and obviously working with local agencies on that?
So Friends of the Chicago River has been working since 1979 to improve water quality, make the river more accessible for people, also safe for wildlife. And it's really been a series of steps using the rules of the Clean Water Act, working with government agencies and partners, and making sure that the river is cleaner, that we're investing in clean water infrastructure, and then making sure that there's public access both to get into the river and get out of the river. So we secured a swimming standard for the Chicago River in 2011, and we've been advocating on behalf of swimmers like Doug and Becca to get people on the water ever since.
Talk about the river's history and why it was unswimmable for so long. A lot of folks know about Bubbly Creek, which is a south fork of the South Branch of the Chicago River.
Yes, that's right, Brandis. Well, you know, Chicago is really no different than cities all around the world. Cities were built on rivers. And as we were developing and growing, we put our waste in our rivers. And so this is commonplace all around the entire planet. Chicago was unique in that we actually reversed our river and connected it to the Des Plaines down to the Mississippi and the Gulf of Mexico to clean up the lake from our drinking water. And so we actually designed our river into the sewer system, which is partly why we've had a cultural battle to really rethink how we view our river, because it took a long time to disabuse people of the fact that it is part of the sewer system. At this point, the river is really dramatically cleaner, and we know it because we're testing the water quality. We can measure it in species of fish, which are, you know, they exist if there's not pollution. We've got river otters, turtles, muskrats, all evidence of a healthy river.
Becca, you won last year's women's 2 mile distance. Describe like what that was like for you and how you're feeling heading into Sunday.
It was amazing. I love the Chicago River Swim. It's such a great organization because they raise money for ALS and also teach young kids how to swim, which is something that's so important, not just because swimming brings so much community to people, but it's a life-saving skill. So I'm really excited. I'm from Chicago, and the river is one of my favorite staples of the city. Like, I just remember as a kid, you know, going on a boat down the river, watching the river get dyed on St. Patrick's Day. And I'm so excited to swim in it because it means so much to me, and it means so much to this whole community too, the whole community of swimming in Chicago. So I think it's going to be a really fun race and just a very meaningful experience as well.
You'll also get a view of the city from a position that people rarely get. It's usually on a boat if you're in the river, right? But for your body to be in the river and looking up at the city, it's going to be a very different experience.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to be surrounded by the city.
Yes, absolutely. Very literally. Doug, the swim is also personal for you. We've talked about the fundraising part for ALS as well as for youth swimming. Tell us how you tied the two together.
ALS is a disease that's hit my family pretty hard. Lost my father to ALS, and then one of my sisters was diagnosed. And it was really after Ellen was diagnosed that we wanted to do something. Having a fatal disease, it makes you feel powerless, and we wanted to feel less powerless. So I had been a swimmer. In fact, I started swimming because I was following in her footsteps. So one sort of brainstorm led to another. She came up with the name of A-Long Swim to match the acronym of ALS. And we've had the good fortune of raising $2.5 million for the med school over at Northwestern. And man, oh man, the progress they're making.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear about your loss of both your father and your sister. And it's amazing that you turned it into this. So, Becca, the most competitive swimming races, they happen mostly in an indoor pool. And this race, though, it's going to start near the Dearborn Street Bridge. It's going to loop through much of downtown. Talk a little bit about the differences in swimming between swimming in open water and an indoor pool.
Yeah. So I'm both an open water and a pool swimmer, and I much prefer open water. I think that there's a sense of adventure to it because you never quite know exactly what you're going to get. You could get different weather, different variables. Your competitors could be in your way because you're both trying to get to the most direct route, to the next buoy. And it just adds a whole other element of adventure. And that really appeals to my spirit. So, I'm just really looking forward to it. And I really want more people to try open water too, because if you don't like swimming in a pool because you think it's monotonous and you don't like staring at that black line, open water might be the way to go and might be the thing for you to do.
Is training for it much different?
Not much different. Open water is an endurance sport because the Olympic event is the 10K. So the only thing that's different in training, in terms of training, is, you know, the amount of yardage you're doing and the amount of swimming you have to do in order to be aerobically fit to complete the 10K.
And you don't have to do the little backflips at the end of the pool.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sure that's
you don't get that rest.
Right? Margaret, you've been with Friends of the Chicago River for 25 years, and you've long said that swimmable cities are livable cities. And we've talked about it. The river kind of gets a bad rap. But you say people have actually been swimming in the river for a little while, just not getting a permit for it. How important is an event like this that kind of establishes a new reputation for the river and for the city?
Yeah, I think it's really key because I think, as I said earlier, culturally we haven't really accepted the river as a recreational resource. If you go downtown in the main stem where they're going to be swimming on Sunday, you could practically usually walk across it on kayaks. 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, that wasn't the case. So we have dramatically changed this river, and it's just entirely a different place. And so what we feel like is that if you, the whole world is going to be looking at Chicago on Sunday because of this event. And we have a beautiful city that is a magical place. And when you see people in the water, you recognize it's safe. And you recognize that there's an opportunity that this could be happening every Sunday all year round. And kids in cities need to have recreation like this. We know from the climate crisis, people need outdoors places to go that are safe and cool. And so investing in our river this way and letting the light shine on it this way is just so exciting.
Doug, 30 seconds left. The last one happened in 1927. Hasn't happened since because of the water quality. Last year, it was moved to the lake for other reasons. What's your plan for the future of the Chicago River Swim in about 20 seconds?
Well, Chicago does big events really well. And we are hoping that the Chicago River Swim can be an annual victory lap over the hard work of not only the City of Chicago, Friends of the River, other nonprofits, and so forth. But we'd like to be one of those big events.
Okay. Congrats. Good luck to everybody on Sunday. Thanks so much to Douglas McConnell, Margaret Frisbee, and Becca Mann. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
And that is our show for this Thursday night. Whether you're heading down to watch the Chicago River Swim event on Sunday or looking for something to do in your neighborhood, check out our website for our Chicago Festival Guide. That's at wttw.com/festivals. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports inclusionary excellence throughout the legal profession.